Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Prince of Endless Tides by Ben Alderson. Narrated by Sean Grindell. A Deal with a God. A deal, the god proposed. For his life, I answered. No, he laughed mockingly, his ancient eyes lapping over split flesh and blood. Not for life. For vengeance. And the price? You. Prologue. 27 years ago. I lurked in the shadows, where no creature could see me. The stone pillars groaned beneath the weight of my tentacles. I wrapped each limb around the ruins of an old city, dragging myself through the murky water towards my destination. The above was painted in the dark jewel tones of dusk, stars winking into existence across the heavens. I wondered if they could see me lurking in the depths, stalking my prey from the doorway of what was once a building. If the gods still watched from their perches, would they be proud of what I had been or what I was forced to become? Perhaps neither. It had been the water which whispered of a disturbance. I had been miles from this forgotten place when the ripples alerted me to something strange. But whatever I had expected to find was not what waited before me. Death. It was everywhere. In all my hundreds of years, this was something I had never witnessed before. Clouds of blood danced within the ocean's currents, catching drifts which twisted around floating corpses. I could taste the iron tang beneath the kiss of salt across my tongue, and I wasn't the only one. There were so many dead, almost too many to count. Some were still whole, whereas others had already been torn apart by the circling grey sharks, their bellies undoubtedly already full, yet still unable to resist the call of blood. But I knew that the true predator had yet to arrive. Soon the myrrh would catch the scent of all this humanity, and they would flock here. So I would wait, lingering in the shadows, trident aloft in my hand, ready to slay every single one of them. I had seen no shipwreck, no proof that these people should have been this far out in the ocean. The nearest island was miles away, too far for so many to simply swim here. How did so many drown at once? Mothers, fathers, sisters, brothers, children. I had to get closer to find clues before the true monsters of the ocean came. I didn't simply crave answers. I starved for them. Stone cracked as my tentacle tightened its grip. I pushed closer to the scene, just as a hammerhead dove in, snatching the blue-grey arm of a man who floated close to me. The shark's swishing tail made my white hair fan out around my shoulders. As I moved forward, the dead were everywhere, hanging lifelessly like puppets on a string. I swam through a cloud of them, cautious to keep myself at a distance. The corpse of a woman passed beside me, chestnut hair waving in front of a paled, freckled face, her arms lifted as though she waited for someone to embrace her, save her. But I was too late. Only death would hold her now. She belonged to Gorgana now, the goddess of death. They all did. Fitting, I thought, considering this forgotten city I swam through was once a great feasting ground for death, a place which had known tragedy. The ruins of this city had been worn down from years beneath the water. Coral clung to old stone, and seaweed grew amongst mounds of rubble. This place was so old, even I did not remember the name of it. Karakos, god of the oceans, had swallowed this city, raising the water high above it as he drew it into his embrace. The god of the ocean was greedy, so greedy that he had once claimed the sky as his own domain, reaching up and threading his water into the clouds, imbuing the air with his moisture. I knew the stories of how that gluttony led to Karakos's demise. This wasn't the first city Karakos claimed. Many had fallen beneath the tidal waves and vicious currents, until, one day, that all stopped. But these dead before me were not from the old world. Where did you come from? Propelling myself through the ruins of the city, I grew closer to its heart. The further I went, the more dead there seemed to be. I held back, cautious. I didn't want to feel dead skin brush against mine. No matter the dead or the living, I desired nothing to touch me. A pulse rippled outward. The beat of what sounded like a muffled drum. Fish scattered out of their shoals. Eels whipped past me, fleeing in haste. The force of it snatched my hair back from my face, kissing my skin and filling my mouth with the salty taste of magic. A tree stood proudly in the center of the city, a strange sight to see so far from land, deep in the ocean. But here it was, and here it had always been. Thick green foliage shifted languidly in the water. Dark brown roots dove through sand and stone, piercing Karakosa's flesh like thorns. A wall of corpses floated before me. I pushed out a hand, willing the water to clear me a path through them, already cringing at the thought of my skin being touched. Corpses tangled themselves in and around the branches, wide eyes and mottling skin glinting in the glow of the ocean. The glare of moonlight barely reached this far down, but my eyesight allowed me to see everything in keen detail. These bodies were strange. They wore clothes I had never seen before, tight fitting to their bodies. Some were even weighed down by thick bands of gold and jewels. What surprised me the most was the lack of wounds. Beside the blood from the sharks feasting, these dead were seemingly fine. Their death was by drowning, nothing else. But how? I didn't need to wait longer for what I truly came here for. The sharks broke formation, fins flicking, bodies writhing to get away. Something had spooked them. These kings of the sea only feared one thing. The word formed in bubbles beyond my lips. Myrrh. I hid myself amongst the trees' branches. Out across the dark, I searched for the telltale glow of milky eyes, the flash of iridescent tails and sharpened teeth and claws. At my waist, my pale skin shivered, where it met the sticky orange flesh of my eight limbs. Each one twitched with unspent energy. But it was not the myrrh who came, at least not yet. Another shudder passed over the ocean, spreading outwards as though someone or something lingered within the bark of the great tree. I thrust myself away, the need for distance loud as alarm bells. Then I stilled at the impossible sight before me. Out of the corner of my eye, I caught movement. Just shy of the thick, luscious crown of the canopy was a foot. It was small as the palm of my hand. Then there was a leg, chubby and stout. And it was kicking, moving not because the water shifted it, but because the baby was alive. One moment it had not been there, and the next it demanded my entire attention. All at once my eight limbs contracted together, propelling me towards the impossible. The infant came into view, small hands grasping out for the tree as though it had enough awareness to latch onto something. It was so small, so innocent, so strange. It had a crown of midnight black hair which danced around its small skull. Wide blue eyes framed with long lashes. A small body barely covered by the white sheet which the ocean slowly unraveled. The baby opened its mouth to wail, inhaling water, filling its tiny little lungs with salt and brine. My power ebbed out of me, wrapping around the water until I commanded them. The currents shifted, drawing the baby towards me. Lips blue, skin growing pale, eyes growing heavy. I once had known death all too well, and I recognized it was only moments from claiming another. It seemed fate wished to toy with me today. My ears twitched, not towards a sound, because the mer could not speak. They lost that ability when the curse changed them, stealing away humanity and leaving only twisted, monstrous creatures in its wake. That was the thing about gods. They made heroes, and they made monsters. The mer were the worst of them. Their disturbance, like an echo, washed over my conscience. The water warned me of the arrival of the mer, their slick and silent forms slicing from their hidden coves and dwellings. I looked between the trident in my hand and the dying baby in the other, and made a choice. It was a simple decision to make, but that didn't stop me from hesitating. I had to save this innocent life. Clutching the baby to my chest, I focused on the above. A halo of light lingered around the moon, casting a circular formation over the surface. I swam, pushing with the force of my 8 tentacles until the water rushed past my ears, leaving the tree and the dead beneath me. As I broke the surface of the ocean, the gills around my neck flattened, allowing for the fresh kiss of nightly wind to bless my lungs. A chill raced over my skin, tickling over my shoulders. I could barely see through the thick, tacky strands of hair plastered over my face. With the child raised above the water, I waited for it to make noise, to prove it still lived. It was so small it rested within my hand, curled into a fetal position, so incredibly motionless. I focused on the faint beat of a heart beneath the press of my fingertips. My magic called out to the water, lingering in the baby's lungs. Holding my fingers above its mouth, I latched onto the unwanted liquid and guided it free. A ball, minute as a pearl, raised beyond its paled mouth, before dissipating into mist at my will. Time drew out. "Live, small one," I urged, brushing the dark hairs from its forehead. My gaze fixed on its chest, waiting for it to move. As though it heard me, it unleashed a bellow so great it had the power to wake the sleeping world. Small lungs now freed of water, I watched the colour slowly seep back into the child's cheeks, flushing them a dawn pink. The sound was a glorious thing. "Hush," I said, unsure what to do with such a little life. "You are safe now." Far off, firelight glinted across the shoreline of Aya. The island was distant, and the weather was calm. Still, even now, I could not fathom how this child, and so many others, had gotten this far out into the ocean. It was a mystery, and one I did not have time to ponder. Far beneath me, the mer would be tearing into the bodies, devouring humanity, spreading their poison, creating more monsters for me to face. It was instinctual, the draw to dive down deep and slay each and every one of them. But then I looked back to the baby, all rosy-cheeked with its banshee-like cry, and I knew where my responsibility lay. I did not know how to console a child. It was not one of my skills, not one of my powers bestowed to me the night I faced Kurikos and came back with a second chance at life. But there was something I could offer it, some form of comfort which time could not have made me forget, no matter if I wished to or not. The song broke out of me as I swam towards the coastline. It was a light melody, one my own mother had once sung to me. From my soul I pulled out the words, which I had not thought about for a very long time. It came to me quickly, as though my mother leaned into my ear now, whispering each note, each lyric. "Hush, little baby, no matter where you stray, across the sea and far away, my love for you persists as strong, a tide which draws you to and from. I will find you anon, anon." The song calmed the child, enough for its screams to simmer to a small whimper. Then it closed its all-seeing blue eyes and slept. I did not know how long I swam for, not until I heard water lapping against wood, followed by the humming of a deep baritone voice in the distance. I looked out from the sleeping child, scared the moment I took my eyes off it, it would die. Gorgana would have had her hunger quenched tonight. I would not allow another life to be handed over to death. A small boat bobbed upon the ocean's surface, the fisherman throwing his netting out into the shallow water. I could not see his face, nor could I tell if he was a good enough man to be worthy of a child. Whatever fate awaited this baby with him would be realms better than what I could have offered. In the unforgiving ocean, there were only monsters and mayhem. The below was not a place for a child, not a place for a human. You were but a child when you first came to me, a far-off voice sounded deep in my core. Did I not save you? I ignored it, refusing to acknowledge the god this time. His allure was commanding, but so was the need to get this child out of the cold water. Doing so was answer enough to the taunting god of the ocean, Karakos, who always lingered close to my conscience. I encased the child's small sleeping body in my power and guided it towards the boat. I waited, with only my eyes lifted above the surface of the water, as the fisherman felt the knock of flesh against the side of his vessel. There was a feral part of me which twisted into knots as he leaned over the edge, peering at what it could have possibly been. That feeling only built as the fisherman reached in, lifted the baby from the water, and cradled it to his chest. It didn't take long for the fisherman to leave. I supposed his bounty did not matter, not when he found an infant in the water instead of fish. Not able to relinquish responsibility, I stalked his boat for a while, until he reached the stone jetty, moored his vessel, and raced towards the Kingdom of Ire with a child clutched in his arms. I could have followed, if I so wished. I didn't. There was something I had to finish, even if my mind was stuck on the mysterious child and the future I had just handed him into. Water sloshed around me as I turned towards the below. I couldn't see the drowned city from here, but if I reached out into the water, it told me the mer still ravaged their meals. Pushing the child to the back of my mind, I focused on my task at hand. I had to focus, to complete the deal I had agreed to all those years ago. The one etched across my torso in swirling ink in the face of a monster. The face of a god. The face of Karakos. My tentacles contracted beneath me, serpentine limbs spinning into a vortex of rubbery flesh. Trident in one hand, the power tracing over my skin, I unleashed a warning cry. It sang of both the promise of vengeance and the hope of my freedom. Part 1. Day Naught. Chapter 1. Ernest.
Do I please you, my prince?
Hadian's question echoed around us, bouncing off the rock walls of the cave. I withdrew his length from my mouth with a pop, gazing up the mounds of muscular stomach to his face. Was it my groan which gave me away?
You certainly do.
My tongue traced my lower lip as I flashed him the wickedest of smiles, although I think the question is, do I please you? Hadian glared down at me as though I was a plate of his favourite food, and he was a starved man. It was an expression I had grown accustomed to. He had been my personal servant for almost a year, so he was rather familiar with taking commands from me. All 6 feet of muscle, sun-kissed skin, brunette hair and a smile which had the power to undo me. But when we found time alone, it was me who got on my knees, bowing to every one of his whims and wishes. Literally.
Yes, Ernest,
Hadian replied, eyes narrowing to intensify his sultry desires.
You do. However, you would please me more if you put my cock back in your mouth and did that thing I like with your tongue.
I rocked backwards, clearing the spit away from the corners of my mouth with the swipe of a thumb. As it is my birthday, I'd like to propose a request.
But the tongue thing you do can wait, I interrupted with a smile.
That was the thing about me. I could make Hadian think I did everything and anything to please him, but in reality it was me who still held the control. Deep down, Hadian knew that too. That was why he liked me.
Ernest of Ire.
He snatched my face with his large hands, kissed me greedily, and then let go of me.
You know I am powerless to refuse you. Ask it, anything, and it will be yours.
When I was with Hadion, I spoke plainly. There wasn't a need to overthink my words or carefully put together what I wished to say in a way that would not upset or offend. No, with him, I spoke from the core. And right now, my core wanted something with a passion. I'd prefer if both our mouths were occupied, I said. His brow peaked.
I'm all open to requests.
I slithered up his torso, the sand indenting beneath my knees. Sand was fucking everywhere. In my hair, between my toes, and in places it really shouldn't be. Whoever it was that glorified sex on the beach was incredibly misinformed. Let me think. I coiled my fingers over his chest like a fiddler crab. Of course, I knew my answer, but drawing it out only added to the excitement.
I have a few suggestions. Patience.
I placed a finger over his lips, silencing him. Hadion took it into his mouth, biting down until my skin ached. I recoiled back, noticing the pinched red skin. Before the moment was ruined, Hadion spoke.
Answer my question, my love.
Gods, the way he said my really puts an emphasis on the word. Not that I minded. It was nice to be desired, naturally. With Hadion, this was all real. He wanted me for me, not what I could offer him. As he waited for my answer, I continued my up-and-down rhythm with my fist around his cock. It was thick, but my fingers still met all the way around it. The length was perfect, smaller than mine, but when I sat on it, the size didn't matter. Pleasure was an entirely unique language, and one I wished to master entirely. If this is the one birthday gift you give me, I want to make sure I ask for the right thing. Otherwise, I may spend the next year regretting my answers. Hadion threw his head back, the veins in his neck bulging as lines of pleasure etched themselves into his forehead.
Fuck, Ernest. I don't know what's better, your hand or that pretty little mouth of yours. Keep going like that and I'll finish before you tell me what you want from me.
I smiled, a winning grin which only highlighted my internal pride. Eat my ass, I said so matter-of-factly, it even caught Hadion by surprise.
Now, Ernest.
He balanced himself on his elbows, his mouth watering at my request.
Where are your manners?
Please, I drawled, pouting with an extended lower lip. Hadion, my humble and most adoring servant, please do me the honours and eat my ass.
Much, much better.
Hadion and I had grown comfortable within our little cove. It was hidden by a rock formation, shadowed by my kingdom, which stretched far above us. From here, the castle built upon the cliff looked endless. It stretched far into the blue skies, piercing the heavens beyond it. One tower was so tall that if you walked up to its top, it made you light-headed, which was exactly the feeling I had now, as Hadion tugged me up to him. I paused long enough to trace my tongue around his nipple, whilst his fingers dug into my scalp. Hadion's anticipation was palpable, I could practically taste it. His pre-cum was lathered across my tongue already. Hadion extended his tongue to me, beckoning me to suck on it next. I knew that look he gave me, all wide-eyed and expectant. It was the type of look someone gave a cool drink on a warm day, all panting and desperate. Hadion's guttural moans and my light purrs echoed across the towering wall of rock at our backs. His touch was firm, but he was always careful not to leave marks. I wasn't so careful. My nails tore into his flesh, scoring him with my touch. No one would ask a servant why their skin was marred by some feral cat. Whereas for me, the prince, if anyone found anything untoward, it would be their damnation. And with Hadion, I couldn't afford to lose him. He was the only real thing in my life, something I held close to my chest and coveted greatly, which was exactly why I'd stolen him away to this very cave, because nowhere else was safe for us both to exist. Outside the cave's mouth, the ocean's surface was so still it could have been made of glass. Occasionally, winged fish would jump out of it, disturbing the surface in endless ripples. Then it would settle once again. Far off in the distance, the shapes of small fishing vessels bobbed, nets cast out and lines waiting patiently for something to snap on bait. They were far enough away that they wouldn't recognize me. Most importantly, they couldn't see me position myself on Hadean's face. Our only witness was Kurikos, the god of the oceans. Maybe the first time we stole away down here, escaping from the castle along the narrow, naturally carved steps into the rock face, I might have worried that he judged me. Now, all those months later, I was sure my bare ass hardly made the god blink. If gods blinked, that was. Hadean shifted my body, his body barely straining to move me. He spun me around, moving me into the position he wanted. Whereas I face his cock, I can feel his cool breath between my spread ass. Gods know I loved this position. It kept both our mouths occupied. It was fair and balanced. No one was left without pleasure. Hadean ate my ass like it was a piece of fruit. A peach dripping with juice, so delicious he couldn't help but devour his fill. And to stop myself from moaning on an endless loop, I bent over and returned his cock into my mouth. I took it all in, every inch, until his head pressed into the back of my throat, making me gag. He growled in response, his tongue lapping my center, his teeth nipping and grazing skin. Every now and then he would slip a finger or two in, stretching me, preparing me. The last time we'd visited our little haven, it had been my turn to bend Hadean over the table of rock and fuck him. Although it was a rare occasion, there was something thrilling about him submitting to my control. But today of all days, I longed for him to have that power. If there was one thing that could rid the tension lingering in every muscle of my body, it was the press of his length against the soft spot deep within me. Just as I readied myself for the initial burn of his entrance, Hadean pushed me off him. I landed carelessly into the sand, the wind knocked out of my lungs and the lust out of my groin. What in Kurikos' name was that for? Get up, Hadean hissed, gathering my clothes and throwing them at me. Quickly! I caught my belongings, blinded half by sand and half by my disappointment. What's gotten into you, Had? Hadean rushed to dress himself, his eyes fixed on something outside of the cave's entrance. Whatever he saw panicked him enough to become rough with me. I followed his line of sight and saw what had caused his urgency. A ship. It was an impressively large vessel, made from red polished wood and golden painted trim. The gargantuan sails were retracted, helping the large vessel slow its movement to a steady crawl. Across the cream material was the symbol of our kingdom, the golden conch shell. My fingers lifted and pressed to the base of my throat, covering the very same marking. Scarred, pale skin had marred my throat for as long as I'd remembered. The strange mark was the muse for my father's emblem, because when I sang, it glowed the same hue of gold stitched into the ship's sail. I thought everyone was accounted for, I said, lifting a hand over my brow. They must just be late arrivals, Hadean replied, tugging a leg of his trousers on before the other. It was almost comical, watching him hop around with my spittle all down his chin and chest. Sunlight reflected off a spyglass from the top of the bird's nest. I slunk back into the shadowed mouth of the cave, feeling the press of Hadean's half-dressed body from behind. His arms wrapped around me, his chin resting on my shoulder, his grip vice-like. It isn't late, Had. Look. I narrowed my eyes on the back of the boat, pointing out something troublesome. Hadean must have noticed it, too. I felt his heart skip through his chest. Is that... My heart hammered in my throat, a chill of dread coursing down my neck. Yes, the myrrh. Spears impelled the vessel's stern. They coated the wooden frame like the spikes protruding from the back of a porcupine. I held my tongue, watching as the ship crept closer into view. Although I couldn't see the port, I could imagine the sudden explosion of action across the long stone jetty. This isn't good, Hadean said. It's lucky the ship has even made it back. The myrrh grow more brazen with every passing year. I couldn't take my eyes off the ship as it passed. When I asked Father last night if all the ships were accounted for, he said they were. Because if he accepted that one ship hadn't returned, he'd be accepting responsibility. Hadean hated my father, and always had. I often thought it was because of the way my father treated me, or the power he held over me. But something told me Haddian's hatred was deeper.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?